Greetings, my peeps, and welcome to the All Things Basketball Podcast with your boy, GD. In this episode, I'll be doing my NBA Finals preview, guys. So I will wrap up the conference finals for the East and the West, and then we'll give you a snapshot of the finals coming ahead. And also, WNBA news, guys. All the stuff that's going on, I'm going to put my twist on everything. You know how I do it. So just sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Okay, guys, it's your boy GD back with the All Things Basketball with GD podcast. And guys, we are now approaching the 2024 NBA Finals. So I'm going to give you my preview. Of course, we're going to tie a bow on the conference finals for the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference, what lies ahead for the teams that lost. And then, of course, I need to get into all this WNBA stuff. So I actually want to start off with that first to get it out the way. So with that said, let's get right into it. So, guys, this past Saturday, in a game that I actually watched, you had the Indiana Fever, of course. Caitlin Clark, she's on the TV now. You know how they doing it, guys. She's all over the place. So, yeah. So she's playing at home against the Chicago Sky with, of course, Angel Reese on that squad. And also you had Camila Cardozo making her WNBA debut because she had missed time with the shoulder injury. So this was appointment TV, guys, and I made sure I watched. And, of course, there had to be a little drama, and drama there was, guys, in two instances. One where Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark was under the basket trying to get a rebound, and Angel and trying to get position. It looks like she shoves Caitlin to the ground, but guys, you know Caitlin Clark, she likes to flop, so I think that was more flop than Angel actually pushing her to the ground. And then when she looked around and saw it was her, she said a little something, and then she kept going. I'll get to that, the dynamic between those two in a minute. But the bigger story, of course, is Chinedu Carter, her and Caitlin Clark going at it. And the end result was Carter pushing Caitlin to the ground with kind of a shove that she knocked her to the ground, which I think we all can agree is not a basketball play. It's a frustration play. So let's deal with what it is. I think we all are under the understanding that that's not a basketball play. But to put it in proper context, prior to that, Caitlin Clark, you could see her clearly trash-talking Clark, not Clark, but Carter. She said a little something to Carter. Carter took exception to it. What she said, I have no idea. And I'm sure, you know, they were pretty much drawing back and forth pretty much the game. And then I guess things just got out of hand for Carter. And then she does the shove on Caitlin. And the crime of it all is that the officials, the referees, only called it a personal foul. But later the league office raised it to a flagrant one. So, yeah, you heard me talk about the NBA referee and the WNBA referee, and it's making them look like polished geniuses, but I digress. So you have the incident there. And then after the game, Carter in her post-game press conference, this is what she says. Of course, you know, the reporters are going to kind of pry and get information out of her in terms of, you know, why you did what you did, so on and so forth. And I guess I get it. I understand you want to interview these people right after, but emotions are so high, so you never know what you're going to get. So Kennedy Carter, obviously still hyped up about the whole situation, pretty much said, I'm not answering any Caitlin Clark questions. And of course, they kept trying to pry, but Coach Teresa Weatherspoon, I'm sorry, told them, okay, that's enough. You guys, that's enough of that. So, yeah, but and it's unfortunate, but, you know, again, the emotions are high, and that's the way it was. And then Angel Reese, she skipped the post-game press conference, and I got to hear actually her reasoning. Family had came in for that game, so I guess there was a situation where there was a miscommunication between her and her media availability, so she ended up not available, and the team was fine thus because of that. But, and then also, Carter doesn't do herself any favors. She doesn't talk to the media, but she goes on Twitter or X, and, you know, she says a whole bunch of stuff there, and then she says basically that Caitlin Clark, she's only good, besides shooting three-point shots, well, is she good for, which, you know, that's a bit of a stretch. I mean, the girl is a talent, but let us not be mistaken. Would I like her to do more stuff than shoot logo threes? Definitely. She should be developing her mid-range game, but I guess, you know, she's doing what she knows how to do now, but I think she should develop more of her game. That's just me, but in any event, so she went to Twitter to say those things. And of course, you know, shows like Nightcap with Unk and Ocho, Shannon Sharp and Chad Johnson, it was more Shannon really saying that, you know, you had so much to say on Twitter, why couldn't you say that in the press conference? And again, I would cut her a little bit of slack because, again, everything was all hyped up and whatnot. And you got to understand something, too, about Carter. She plays with a chip on her shoulder. She came into the W, actually had a very good rookie season. Then the next season, then she had beef with someone on the roster, so that kind of didn't do her any favors. Then she starts out with Atlanta Dream, then she goes to the LA Sparks, and she has issues over there as well. So last year, she just played overseas, honing her skill and so forth. This year, she joins the Chicago Sky, where someone who probably gets her teaspoon, a coach like that probably gets her, and so far she's getting good production out of her coming off the bench. In fact, she leads all bench scorers and all bench players in scoring. So you have that. But nonetheless, she plays with a chip on her shoulder. I say that. So that's who she is. That's the way she rolls. So there's that. And then on Monday, she's in a press conference Monday, you know, prior to the game at home against the Liberty. And then she basically says this: I'm a competitor. I'm going to compete no matter who you are and no matter who's in front of me. So that's just what it was. The heat of the moment play. We're getting at it. We're going back and forth. It's basketball. It's all hoops. After we finish the game, it's all love. And then she continues. I'm seeing a lot of things, players, fans not understanding who I am as a player. You have to understand me as a person. And don't just look at one clip or one tape and form an opinion about me. I'm truly a passionate person about the game, and I'm genuine. You can ask all my teammates. They've gotten to know me. They know the real Trinity Carter. So that's what she had to say in the presser. And I get that. I understand that. And I'm in 100% agreement with her. If you didn't watch the game, you don't really, your opinion kind of invalid because you have to see it. And I talk about this all the time, guys. Context matters. To know the context of why it came to that point matters. Should she have done it? Absolutely not. She shouldn't have lost control like that. But she did. And again, it was a accumulation of all that was going on in the game. And it came to a boiling point where she just shoved her. So there's that. And then, of course, people are going to talk about why nobody came to her defense. And then I heard Nancy Lieberman said she would have knocked her out. Nancy Lieberman, man, don't play with her. That's Queens finest there. Don't mess around with her. Queens, New York, don't mess with Nancy Lieberman. But she did question also where was the teammates. And after the play, actually, Aaliyah Boston was right there on the inbounds. Well, about to inbound the ball. So she did go to pick Caitlin up. But everybody else, where were they? Which leads a lot of people, Matt Barnes is one to say, where's their teammates? Nancy Lieberman just said it. And Draymond Green, of all people. And talk about, you know, you need an enforcer on the team, this and that. Let me just first say about the teammates. If you don't have that in you, as far as being an enforcer, it's not going to happen, guys. That's just the way it is. It's not going to happen for you. If you're not built to be an enforcer, you can't pretend to be an enforcer. That's what I'm saying to you. If it's not in you, you're not going to be able to pull it off. Not convincingly, that is. So, do they need to bring in an enforcer? And my whole thing is, do we say these things about the NBA? Those days are over in the NBA. I mean, you got tough guys and so forth. But right now in the finals, you see the two teams there. Are there any enforcers on those teams? I think not. So, the whole notion that, you know, she needs this bodyguard and all this. And I think that's, before I even say that, let me read Teaspoon's statement, and this will probably give you a clearer understanding. She said in a statement, because she didn't talk about it after the game much, but she made a statement, which I give her props for. A lot of people said, why did she address it like Dawn Staley would right then and there? You got to understand, too, Dawn Staley's been in this coaching business for a minute. So she knows how it goes with the media, how to play things and how to be ready with a response like that. This is Teaspoon's first go around as a head coach. So she'll learn the minutiae and all that she needs to know as far as dealing with the media and those sort of things. So I give her credit for making this statement here, though. Physical play, intensity, and a competitive spirit are hallmarks of Chicago Sky basketball. Not surprised there, because she was like that as a player. Kennedy got caught up in the heat of the moment in an effort to win the game. She and I have discussed what happened and that it was not appropriate, nor is it what we do or who we are. Kennedy understands that there are better ways to handle situations on the court, and she will learn from this, as we all will. As a team, we will grow together and continue to work hard to display strong leadership and set a positive example for our competitors, fans, and partners. So that is Teaspoon's statement there. And I say that to say, for all these pundits that are new to covering the WNBA, which is why I have the title there in the scroll there, The Absurdity of Today's WNBA Coverage. These people now talking about the WNBA, I gotta be wise when I say this, but you're just coming to talking about the league. You weren't talking about it before. Whatever the reasons are, you want to say Caitlin, fine. You want to say the rookie class, fine. Whatever it is, you are now talking about it on your shows and media spaces. So I would think if you're going to start to talk about something, at least get a little bit of knowledge on the history of the sport that you're covering. And I say that to say physical play is a part of the WNBA for as long as I've been watching. I've been watching since the inception. Physical play is just a part of it, guys. There's no two ways around it. They got videos on YouTube of young ladies there that play in the W talk about their welcome to the WNBA moment. And those weren't like handshake moments. Those were elbows in the ribs. Those were trips. Those were all these sort of things that they faced as a rookie coming into the W. That's just the way it is. So this whole idea, well, first let me say this to Caitlin Clark. I did an episode on the overreaction, the early overreaction about her, but in that she'll be fine, she'll be okay. I stand by that. She'll be fine, she'll be okay. But Caitlin Clark came into the WNBA with her eyes wide open. She knew it was going to be tough. She knew about the play, some of the physical play. She knew she was going to be a target. And I don't say that as far as people are out to ruin her career and take her out. I don't mean that. But I'm talking about defenses. Talk about the fact that some teams are picking her up full court and, you know, D'ing her up. Because you have to, because she's not only dangerous with her three-point shot, but her passing ability is far advanced, guys. So you have to pick her up. That's just the way it is. And right now, for whatever it is, she's the head of the snake over there for that Indiana Fever offense. She's the head of the snake, so you have to cut off the head of the snake. However you have to do it, you do it. So if it means throwing a Dejanay Carrington on her full court, you do that. A Banaji Laney Hamilton, you do that. Whoever you have to put on her, you put on her. And in this case, even a Trinity Carter, who can D you up. You do it so she doesn't wreak havoc on the offensive end. That's just the way it is, guys. So there's no target where they're trying to take her out. No, that's not happening, guys. Let's keep it a buck. All right? So, and the whole league does not can't stand her. Let's stop with that notion. Charles Barkley, you got up there. It's talking about them being petty. Don't stop being petty and how she's got them chartered flights and all that. Let's talk about the charter thing just really quick. They were working on that anyway. After that incident with Brittany Griner at the airport, they were behind the scenes working with that. In fact, they had it set for Brittany Griner to take those charter flights herself, to take those. But it didn't happen for one reason or another, but they were still negotiating that. So did Caitlyn's presence kind of expedite that? Possibly so. And that's okay. But the whole notion, Barkley, that the whole league is petty and jealous. And you should know better, Barkley. And then my whole thing, too, is the next time you see Barkley at a WNBA game will be the first time. You never see him at any game. So you don't even have skin in the game. You just riding the coattail of LeBron, who talked about it. Then you got to jump on top of it. And then LeBron's angle, he tried to tie in what Caitlin's going through with what his son Bronny is going through. So that's a whole different agenda there. But Barkley, come on, you got to be smarter than that. And then you have what happened on Monday on First Take with Stephen A. Smith was there, Shannon Sharp was there, Monica McNutt was there, and Molly Kierum, of course, the moderator. And, you know, they were going back and forth, and it seemed like Monica was under attack because she was basically trying to tell these people, these are nuanced conversations that we need to have in terms of analysis of what you're seeing on the court in the WNBA. And that's true. And that's true. So, and then it got real heated when Stephen A, you know, he got pat himself on the back saying that who covered the WNBA more than he did. And that's when she went back at him saying, respectfully, you could have did this 3 years ago, and which he was taken aback and he wasn't really able to retort the way he wanted to. So, of course, he goes on his little pod, should say little, excuse me. He goes on this podcast and he lays it out and says how Monica's wrong and this and that, protect the cash cow and so on and so forth. My whole thing with that discussion, nobody's trying to ruin this girl's career. They just don't want to make things easy on her. How hard is that to understand? You don't, and you hear other people talk about how, oh, she's getting double and triple teamed, and that's not right. It's basketball, guys, and they know her ability. That's more of a sign of respect than it is of, because nobody wants to get shown up by a rookie. Nobody wants that to happen to them. So they're going to D her up the way they feel they should D her up. That's the way it is, guys. So what are we even doing here? So when you have these people who are new to covering the WNBA, you need to do your homework, is all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. You need to have people on your show like a Monica McNutt, like a Andrea Carter, who does an amazing job, your L. Duncans, and Tarika Foster Brasby. You need these kind of people on your show because they know the ropes. They know what's what as far as the WNBA goes. Christy Scott is another one. Christy Scott Winters. She's another one. Very good. So, and then you have some guys who cover this league and give it its proper due and its proper nuance. I like to consider myself one of them. Also, Ron Artest's brother, Daniel Artest. Listen to him. He's on 95.50. But he has a podcast. He does an amazing job. So, there's guys of course, there's women there, but there's guys too who understand the level of play that goes on in the W, and they give it its proper due. But when you have these people who come in out of nowhere, your Pat McAfee's, who embarrassed himself the other day with what flew out of his mouth, I won't even utter those words, not on this podcast, no way. But here's what he did say that I can utter. She's the only reason viewership is up and not the whole rookie class. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. You got other teams that's been selling out. Las Vegas Aces, two-time defending champ. They're always selling out. Liberty. I go to Liberty games. I see how packed that arena is. Atlanta Dream, they just announced they're sold out. You got other places as well. Phoenix, they come out in full force. In fact, they call their crowd the X Factor out there. So this whole idea that it's one person driving everything, to me, it doesn't make sense. It really doesn't. If you talk about her games alone, I'll grant you that. I'll give you that. But if the Liberty is playing the Sky, what does Caitlin Clark have to do with that? Come on, be smarter than that, man. Be smarter than that. That's all I'm saying. And which led, of course, Angel Reese to come out and say that one, kind of what I'm saying, but she's giving herself credit because of the championship game. To which, and then Angel Reese, I got to chide you, because when all that was going on with Carter and Clark, you get up there cheering and carrying on. You got to be more mindful, Angel, because you know this was a nationally televised game. You know the cameras were everywhere. To have you on camera elated because Caitlin got knocked down, that's a bad look. That's a bad look. And I know you embrace the villain role and all this and that, but you just got to be a little wiser. I understand she's only 22 years old, so wisdom will come eventually. One day she'll look back and say, maybe I shouldn't have did it like that. But those around her, you got to tell her, you got to dial it down just a little bit, because all the eyes were on that game. So, you know, all the cameras going to be, let's see if when that happened, if Angel Reese, what she does. And boom, you give them red meat. So you can't do it like that. And then let me just say this for all those. Oh, Angel hates Caitlin. Caitlin hates Angel. Let me take you to a time with Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, because that's the comparison that they make between those two. Initially, they didn't like each other. They did not like each other. They initially did not like each other. Believe it or not, guys, they did not like each other. You know how they became friends? You want to know how? They shot a commercial together for Converse. And it was where Magic was coming out to where Larry Bird lives, and they challenged each other to a game of 1-on-1. It's there where they became friends. That's how that went down. And then so much so, Larry Bird mother raves about Magic Johnson. So, sure, they may not like each other now. Wait until they start playing on the Olympic teams together, because Caitlin one day will make the Olympics. I believe one day Angel Reese will as well. And they'll be playing together, guys. So this whole notion of them not liking each other, that's okay. It's sports. That's okay for two rivals not to like each other initially. No problem whatsoever. And you got some people who still carry grudges till this day. Talk to Paul Pierce when he gives his commentary about LeBron and those things. He's, and you can hear for yourself. That's just the way it is, guys. It's sports. So this whole notion that it should be kumbaya with everybody, it's not going to be. But it's not going to be an entire league that's hating on one person or the other. It's competition. That's all it is. It's competition. Monica McNutt expressed that to Stephen A. I heard Elle Duncan's, she has a podcast. I listened to that today, and she expressed the same thing. And she's exasperated with it all the nonsense. And then I saw a clip of Breonna Stewart where they asked her about the physicality in the W. She looks so, like, she gave an eye roll. She tapped the desk. Like, what are we even doing here asking these kind of questions about the physicality? When if you've been here, you know this league is physical. So what are we even doing, man? That's all I'm saying with this. That is all I'm saying. And then I heard a very good discussion on CNN between Bob Costas and Kerry Champion, who used to be the host of First Take. Very good conversation in this regard. And Bob Costas, I give him credit. He kept it real. He said the fact that we saw on national television a black girl push a white girl to the ground, everybody's in the uproar. Mind you, about a week ago, Angel Reese gets clotheslined by a fellow alumni in Alyssa Thomas. Nobody said a peep. I saw clips on Instagram and then on YouTube, but there was no outrage. There was no segments that took 40 minutes long like the other day with First Take. There was none of that. So what are we even doing with this talk? Say it with me, guys. The WNBA is a physical league. That's the way it is. That's the way it is. Should the refereeing be better? 100%, absolutely. No question. It should be better where they could kind of rein in some of this physical play that goes overboard. Physical play within the confines of the game, I don't have an issue with. In fact, a lot of people say the W is more physical than the regular NBA, so go figure. But I say all that to say, and then two, one more thing, then I'm done with this. The Chicago Tribune editorial piece. In this country, it seems like now we have failed as far as journalism goes. We are into trash journalism, and this piece is trash journalism by the Chicago Tribune. They call what happened to Caitlin on that Saturday tantamount to assault. Where was your editorial piece when your own player got clotheslined? Angel Reese, where was that piece? No, you didn't have it because it didn't fit your agenda. It's insanity, guys. So again, I say, what are we even doing here? You want to complain about it? Complain about it. But keep it on an even keel. Don't just say because it's happening to one person that there's outrage now. Come on, man. Come on. That's all I'm saying about this whole thing. But, yeah, so let me just leave it alone right there. And then add some other stuff. But let me get to the crux of it, and that's the NBA. I'll talk about the other stuff another time. All right, guys, so that is it for that. All I'm saying, guys, just if you're going to commentate on the WNBA, get your history down and know what happened prior to in order to give a nuanced opinion towards today's WNBA. That's all I'm saying. So I'll leave it there. All right. So, guys, the conference finals are over. And now we have the NBA finals. So let's talk about it. The Boston Celtics, the one seed, taking on the sixth seed, the Indiana Pacers, who knocked off my Knicks, unfortunately, in 7 games. And then prior to that, they beat Milwaukee. And then Boston, who seems to have a pretty easy go of it. They faced the Miami team without Jimmy Butler, beat them in 5 games. Then they go on to beat Cleveland Cavaliers minus Donovan Mitchell for a couple of games, and they vanquished them. So they now face an Indiana team pretty much healthy, and they just sweep them, guys. It's a 4-game sweep. Here's how it went. Game one, Boston wins 133-128. So Boston just raining down threes and everything else. So they win that one in a game that was tied at the half, two guys, but Boston prevails. And then game two, also in Boston, they win that one 126-110. And actually, the only game that was kind of a blowout there, a game in which actually Boston was ahead by 6 at the half, but in the second half just really took over. Then you shift over to the Indiana going there in game 3. Boston wins that 114-111. And actually, Indiana led that game at the half by 12 and still took an L. And then Boston in the last game, 105-102, beating Indiana on their home court, thus sweeping them. A game where they were barely ahead at the half, 58-57. For the series, guys, Jason Tatum actually, he comes to life, guys, averaging over 30 points per game, over 10 rebounds. So he's averaging a double-double there, 6.3 assists. You like that, over a steal per game, shooting it from the field over 46%. Not so great from three-point range, guys, a little above 30%. And at the free throw line, he misses only 6 free throws in the series. He took 28. So Jason Tatum has an absolutely wonderful series. And then not too far behind is Jaylen Brown. Nearly 30 points a game for him, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals. He shot it from the field almost 52%, guys. That's how on fire he was. 37% from 3, and from the free throw line, he did miss 10 free throws out of 29. But Jaylen Brown, and actually did he get the Larry Brown Award? I believe he did. Yeah, so Jaylen Brown just taking care of business, guys. Derek White, solid series for him. Nearly 17 points per game for him. 6.5 assists, nearly 5 rebounds. And he had the defensive numbers as well. Over 2 blocks and 2 steals. So, very good series for Derek White. Drew Holiday come to life. 18.5 points. Over 7 rebounds, nearly 6 assists, 1.5 steals for him. Shot it great from the field, guys. Almost 59%, which you absolutely love. Oh, nearly 42% from 3. And he was perfect from the free throw line, guys. I say he's an X factor, guys, but I'll talk about that in a minute. So that's the Boston side of things. As far as Indiana, Pascal Siakam had a nice series, guys. Over 23 points per game, 7.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists, shooting it over 55% from the field. So you love that. Not great from 3, guys. He only made 2 attempts. No, he only made 2 3-pointers out of 10. And then from the free throw line, he only went 9 times, made 7. Andrew Nembhard had a nice series, guys. 21 points per game for him. So it was definitely a coming out party for him. Nearly 8 assists and nearly 4 rebounds for him. And shot it well from the field, over 54%. From 3, he was pretty lethal, almost 50% there. And missed 1 free throw, taking 9. Tyrese Haliburton, he missed 2 games in this series. He pulled the hamstring, so he ended up missing 2 games. He did average 17.5 points, 9 assists, and 3.5 rebounds, 2 steals. But, of course, to no avail, because he ended up missing the 2 games there. Miles Turner, not such a great series for him. He shot it well, but only above 15 points per game and only 7 rebounds. You'd like to see more that. TJ McConnell stepped in as best as he could, but to no avail. So Boston gets the sweep, guys. And I'm like, as banged up as my Knicks is, we could have did that. Got swept out of there, but I digress. So Indiana, they're gone. What's next for Indiana? Right now in free agency, Pascal Siakam, he's an unrestricted free agent. He was paid last season nearly $38 million. So does the Pacers re-sign him, give him that large max deal that he may be looking for? We'll see. Doug McDermott, he's somebody who's a free agent, was just paid $14 million. I doubt if you see that kind of money again. McDermott does. Daniel Theis, nearly just about $7 million for him. And then Obi Toppin, that's going to be an interesting one there because he has a qualifying offer, and that's at above $9 million. So what they do with Obi Toppin will be interesting. Resting to see and to witness what happens there. And then remember, guys, I think this gets lost in the whole Indiana talk. They were missing Ben Mathurin, guys. Ben Mathurin is a absolute problem. And he's a guy who they definitely could have used in this series, that's for sure. Swing man who can light it up. So getting back Ben Mathurin healthy, that's going to be key for them. Of course, re-signing Siakam. And then again, what to do with Obi Toppin. So, and I'm just having my little laugh because they got swept. So, it is what it is. All right, so that is the one series. Let's talk about the Dallas series where they played the Minnesota Timberwolves. They were the 5-seed guys. Dallas was. And Minnesota was the 3-seed. Dallas beats them 4-1. Here's how it shook out, guys. Dallas takes the first game in Minnesota, 108-105. In a game that was nip and tuck, guys, but they prevail. And then game 2, they also take in Minnesota, 109-108. A game where Minnesota actually was leading at the half, guys, by 12 and still took the loss. Then you shift the scene to Dallas. Dallas takes that first game there, 116-107, thus making it a 3-0 series. And, of course, you know, no team has come back from a 3-0 deficit in NBA history. So history was not on the side of the Timberwolves. Game 4, they redeemed themselves, winning 105-100, a game that was tied at the half, but Minnesota prevails. And then Dallas takes game 5 at Minnesota. So basically they win 3 games on Minnesota's home floor. 124-103, a game where they led at the half by 29, guys. So they end up getting the win. In that series, of course, the story begins and ends with both Luka Doncic, and Kyrie Irving. Luka for the series, above 32 points per game, over 9.5 rebounds, over 8 assists, and over 2 steals for him, shooting at 47.3% from the field, a nice 43.4% from three-point range, and he only misses 6 free throws in that series. He goes to the line 39 times, guys. Kyrie Irving, a lot has been said about him lately, how his maturity and how he has handled things in Dallas. A lot of people was writing him off in Dallas. And quiet as kept, I was one of them. I thought it was more, not behavior-wise, but health-wise, because he has that in his history. But this wasn't the case, guys. So Kyrie has been available, and that's the thing. When Kyrie shows up and he's available, he's a dangerous guy, man. That's just the way it is. So Kyrie for the series, 27 points per game. He averaged over 4.5 assists and over 3.5 rebounds for him. Shooting it a nice 49% from the field, guys. 37.5% from three. You like that. Missing only 5 free throws in the series, taking 26 free throws there. So, and then, of course, you have the combination inside of Derek Lively II and Daniel Gafford. Those gentlemen combined for over 20 points per game, over 14.5 rebounds, and over 4 blocks between the two of them. So these guys are really getting it done inside for them. And that has been a major difference in what Dallas has been able to do in these playoffs. And PJ Washington, nice series for him as well. As far as Minnesota goes, you got to start with the young prodigy there. Anthony Edwards, 24.6 points per game, nearly 9 rebounds, nearly 8 assists for him. Shot at only 43% from the field, guys. A nice 40-plus point six from three-point range. And then missing 8 free throws, taking 32. Karl Anthony Towns, you'd like to see a better series from him, but that wasn't to be. Over 19.5 points per game, above 8 rebounds, a couple of assists. Shot it from the field, just under 38% rather. Not good at all, guys. And from three, he was 8 of 33. God, that's not going to cut it, guys. That is not going to cut it. And he was solid from the free throw line. Then you had contributions from guys like Naz Reid, also Mike Connolly, Rudy Gobert. Not such a great series for him. Just under 12 points per game. And not even 8 rebounds he was averaging under that. So that's not what you want to see out of a defensive player of the year. You want to see him be able to control the inside there. The fact that he didn't even average at least a block per game, very telling, guys. So with that said, Minnesota is out. Now, of course, they have a bright future, guys. The future looks bright when you got a guy like Anthony Edwards, so we see what happens there. As far as free agency, just a couple of guys. Monty Morris, the backup point guard, who was making nearly $10 million, and then Kyle Anderson, who's making above $9 million. So I'm sure somebody will definitely try and get the services of a Kyle Anderson, who's kind of a Swiss Army knife himself. So definitely a player that teams would definitely want to have in their camp. And then the big thing too is, guys, they got money tied into 3 guys, big money. Anthony Edwards, Karl Anthony Towns, that max extension is going to kick in. And then Rudy Gobert, he's still getting a lot of money. So between those 3 guys, you're talking $136.4 million. Wow. So that doesn't leave you a lot of room to add, but we'll see what happens. But Minnesota's in a good place. You want to see a guy like Carl Anthony Towns play a little bit better, and I'm sure that'll come in time, I imagine. All right, with that said, guys, we now have the championship game, well, championship series. Number one seed out of the East, Boston Celtics, going against the five seed in the West, the Dallas Mavericks. Boston took this series during the regular season, 2-0. And only one of those games was with the new additions on the team. And then that game actually didn't have Kristaps Porzingis in it. So that's something to keep in mind. Key matchups, guys. I think Jason Tatum versus PJ Washington, a huge matchup there. If you continue to see the Jason Tatum from the Indiana series in this series, in Boston, they'll be on easy street, guys. Also, Luka Doncic, I'm guessing he'll probably see a Derek White guarding him. Derek White gives up a few inches to him, nonetheless, but to me, that's your best backcourt defender there, and that's saying something because you have Drew Holiday as well. I think Drew Holiday will be on Kyrie, which will be a very compelling matchup as well. And then also, guys, word has it, Kristaps Porzingis, he will appear in the first game. How many minutes he's on, we'll see. He could be on a minutes restriction. Thankfully, these games are spaced out where they're like a game and then you have 2 days off and then another game, and it's kind of spaced that way. So that will help Porzingis, that's for sure, in this series if he was to give it a go throughout the series. And then the coaching matchup of Joe Mazzulla versus Jason Kidd. I think that's going to be one of those that kind of flies under the radar. My prediction, guys, I really wanted to go back and forth with this one, but I got to say Boston in five, guys. I know a lot of people are high on Dallas now, especially with the changes they made, especially, you know, getting guys like Washington and Galford, but Boston just has too much firepower, man. And I didn't even mention Jaylen Brown. Who's going to deal with him? Derrick Jones Jr.? I see Jaylen Brown getting the best of that matchup. So, and again, if Porzingis gives you a little something, you're going to be in good shape. And I happen to like Boston's bench better than Dallas's bench. When you got guys like Al Horford there, Peyton Pritchard, Sam Hauser. So, yeah, I'm going Boston in five, guys. I think they'll be able to – they may let Luka and Kyrie kind of, you know, they'll try and keep them at bay, but I think if you hold down the other guys, I think you got really got a shot in this one. All right, so that is it for me. I thank you for listening, as always. I had some more WNBA news, but I'll save that. There's always room for that as the season's going on. All right, guys, as always, thank you for listening. All Things Basketball with GD.com is the website. There I got support buttons. PayPal is there. Spotify button is there. Also, buy me a coffee. That's on the website. Cash App, $GD, that sports dude. That's my Cash App, guys. You can follow me, YouTube. I'll be there. All your podcast platforms, I'm there. And then the socials, I'm there as well. So, all right, guys, that's it for me. I thank you for listening as always. And your listenership means so much to this program. It's always appreciated. All right, guys, with that said, I thank you for listening, and we'll talk soon. Take care.